Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies.
You know, what's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. And when it gets cold out, we got to bring in some warmth. And that is the goddess herself, the goddess of grains, Angie Setzer, Vice President of Grains at Citizen Elevator. What's up, Angie?
Living the dream, just looking outside right now and thinking about how much I hate winter. But aside from that, doing pretty good.
Well, you get a little vacation in the wintertime, right? You get you don't get one, but you get guys a little less farming work in the winter unless you're running livestock, right?
Yeah. For most guys, I remember the first time I'd worked with grain guys, because growing up on a potato farm, we had to make sure you managed inventory all year. You know, it has to be kept at the right temperature, this, that, and the other thing. And the first time I met a group of grain guys that went to Florida for 3 months, I was like, why did I grow up on a potato farm? You know?
Yeah, so, there you go, see?
A boom, it'll go away.
All right, so, you know, in our ongoing saga of talking about what's going on and how, so the Trump victory, we talked after that, but now it's been a little over a month, and he's talking about some good things. He's talking about some good things that will help farmers if he gets them through. What are your thoughts of what he's talking about, what he's trying to do, and what he wants to do?
Well, I think, you know, so far from a regulatory and small business standpoint, most people should be pretty happy. The waters of the U.S. Deal, that looks like we'll see that kind of roll back, which has been a big concern for a lot of farmers. There's other things out there that have been problematic from a regulatory standpoint for small businesses, things of that nature. Still waiting to hear what he's going to do with health care costs, but I think that's a much bigger coil of rats than what he thought it was when he first got it started. And, you know, from an overall standpoint, business-wise, what he's talking about doing is good, I think. The other side of the coin, you know, of course, there's some folks that are concerned with what that means for different parts of, you know, if they believe in climate change or if they have an environmental stake, they're a little bit concerned. But to me, I mean, you can't win for losing sometimes. So there's always going to be an unintended consequence, I think, perhaps with some of these things. But overall, I'm looking forward to what he's talking about from a regulatory standpoint, the government spending side of things. You know, there's a lot of people, just this morning he tweeted about Lockheed Martin or tweeted about the F-35 costs and things of that nature. And I can't help but agree with them on some of these costs that we've been spending. I mean, it's the same as healthcare, what we've talked about in the past with healthcare, where if someone's going to pay it, someone's going to bill it. And so what we've had happen with a lot of government contracts is the spending in them has just gone out of control. So I can't argue with them on that. I think it's interesting to see folks kind of try to digest the new way that he's communicating with the general public, you know, through Twitter. I think that surprises a lot of people. There's times that I wish he wouldn't tweet, and then there's other times where, you know, I talked about it in the past, this is kind of the new mode of communication. So it makes you have to take a step back and think for a minute, is this that different, or is he coming forward and doing some good things? I don't know. For every yang, there's a yang for me with the start of this presidency here.
Well, you know, I guess let's start with the green energy. I mean, I don't know where you stand. If you're a believer or a non-believer, you can tell me in a minute. But even if it is an issue, okay, but don't we have to take care of our business first? Don't we have to take care of the present first before we worry about the potentials of what could happen? What do you think?
Yeah, well, I agree. And I mean, I'm just being the devil's advocate when I bring up the green side of things, simply because I know that there's a significant portion of the population that's going to be their gripe about all of this, is that suddenly we're going to roll back regulations and yada, yada, yada. the reality is we're not going to be dumping raw sewage into rivers. You know, we're not going to be Beijing Junior over here. I think we have a lot of people that are impacted by regulations that will be properly or positively benefit when regulations are rolled back, that are also environmentalists to a certain extent. I mean, you'd be amazed at how many farmers, they would never necessarily consider themselves an environmentalist, but their biggest stake in the environment overall, or they have the biggest stake in the environment overall. So, you know, I think there's going to be, like I said, pushback on that side. But I think from a business standpoint, it's a great thing. You know, I'm not really sure at this point in time, many of my farmers even have a general understanding as to what it would mean for them. And we don't have an understanding as to what it would mean for them. We just know that down the road, it should benefit them in some way to see some of these things that, you know, we've seen a lot of government overreach really start to develop, you know, not only over the last 8 years, but I would say, and we saw it really start, you know, maybe in the late 70s, early 80s, whatever it was. And not a lot of that's been rolled back. Or a lot of times if you see new laws put in place, you don't expect them to be taken, you know, to go away. So we'll have to see what actually happens when the boots hit the ground. But from our side of things, or from a business side of things, it's beneficial to know that you'll actually have a government that's somewhat on your side when it comes to being able to do business.
You know, and I agree. I mean, I think that, you know, the bottom line is it seems to me that, you know, Trump kind of wants to go back to the, you know, I mean, it should be the city, the county, the state, and then federal government should be involved. But first, it should start within your own backyard, don't you think?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I definitely think so. I think that, you know, most folks, and that we've already had this discussion, so libertarian in many ways, I can barely see straight. And that is, you let me, you know, handle my property the way I want to handle it. You know, unfortunately, there are a lot of people that have made that impossible to just let that be the law of the land. So we do have a general baseline of rules and regulations for the local area. Yeah, I definitely think in basically most all things, except for, of course, your currency and the major things that have to be nationalized, that the local government should be your first and then the state. But what we've seen happen is that was the intent, but then suddenly we saw the state government overreach first, and then the federal government's come in and trumped the state governments in a lot of ways and has definitely, I think, overstepped their bounds.
I could not agree with you more. I think that, again, I think that we need to get back to, because, you know, obviously there's so many different parts of the country. I mean, there's different parts of Iowa, you know, and
yeah.
You have to deal with what you have first, because we're not all the same. And certainly regulations that would be put in place in New York would not be necessarily the same regulations put in Iowa, correct?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's the same thing as what we're trying to figure out. If you look at the state of Michigan and Lake Erie and the algae blooms, you know, and a lot of areas are trying, or a lot of places are trying. At first, it was the local problem. Well, then all of a sudden, the state government stepped in and tried to trump the local governments and what was going on. And then all of a sudden, it became, wait a minute, we've got several states that touch Lake Erie, and so this affects all of them. So the federal government, you know, wanted to step in and make some determinations, when the reality is it's probably small urban areas and in the overrun. You know, everyone wants to point at farmers in this instance, but the reality is you know, the overrun of fertilizer used on lawns and things of that nature is not even considered many times in federal government when the federal government's involved. They consider it has to be agriculture. And that, so yeah, I mean, if you have high urban populations, your concern is going to be vastly different, you know, in Chicago as it will be in Iowa.
I got to cut you short. We're up against a break. This is Angie Sester, Goddess of Grains, Vice President of Grains, Citizens Elevator. This is The Bubba Show. Todd, Bubba Horowitz, LibertyTalk.fm. I'll get you the download. We'll be back right after the break.
Wake up, Maggie.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show as we hit that quick exit, but we are with Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, and of course, vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator, out in the nice cold parts of Iowa as the chill is in the air. And is it getting too cold too early for everybody, or is there any major effects on this weather out in farm country, or no big deal?
Not really a big deal. I mean, from an overall standpoint, from field work. Now, you get into the teens, and I mean, in some areas, the highs will be below zero here to come in this week. That's not good for livestock. So you'll have some damaging effects on the livestock side of things, and perhaps some winter kill and stuff like that. And so no one wants to see that, especially the farmers who have to work in it. But, you know, it's winter time. A lot of folks expect it, but we would much rather see winter, you know, in the mid-teens to 30 degrees than below 10 or something of that nature, like we're going to see this week.
Well, yeah, I mean, it does. Now, typically, I'm cattle, when it gets too cold, they tend to lose too much weight, right? Because they're too busy trying to huddle up and keep warm, and they refuse to eat. They refuse to leave where it might be 5 below instead of 10 below.
Yeah, well, they actually will eat more because their body needs to keep up the digestion system part to keep them warm. So I don't want to say it's necessarily a major fundamental shift by any means, but you could see a little bit more shrink in livestock populations if the cold weather comes in early and sticks around for an extended period of time. And perhaps an increase in feed needs because they'll try to do whatever they can to keep their body temperature up there.
Now, as we start looking, you know, forward into, 2017, what's the typical farmer's schedule going into the new year? What's the what do they start to do? What are their plans and schedules going forward now? And like what you see, depending on obviously it may difference what you're doing, but give us a basic rundown.
Right now, a lot of them are meeting with accountants, year-end tax stuff, figuring out, you know, do they need to buy equipment to increase the depreciation schedule on their farm, or do they need to sell grain to increase their income? You know, many farmers are kind of tax loose when it comes down to it. You know, Donald Trump's not the inventor of figuring out ways to maybe lessen your tax burden. So a lot of farmers right now are in the process of doing that. Most of my guys are figuring out what they need to do from a movement standpoint for the grain off the farm, what kind of price targets we're looking for, how many bushel they have on farms, you know, what we got to do for quality, things like that. So usually around the end of the month into the first part of January, we start to see a lot more grain move because we have what we call the John Deere payment wave of grain usually that makes its way in because John Deere payments are due mid-February. So we joke about that in the industry that you'll see grain move after January 1st extensively, usually for about 4 or 5 weeks, a lot of grain moves, and then February comes, and if the weather is super cold and not very nice out, then the grain stops moving for a while, and then you'll start to see it pick back up as the weather kind of breaks loose or as cash flow needs kind of get involved. So for most guys that do field work now, that's all they're going to do, book work, catch up on the year past, hopefully look ahead to the year that they have coming at them. And my hope this year for most of my guys is that they're looking to get their soybeans, new crop soybeans, at least a good portion of them marketed, as well as their old crop at these pricing levels. And then we're just kind of waiting to see what happens with corn and wheat.
Now, new crop, old crop, I mean, that's a term that we all know and hear. Explain new crop, old crop, and the different commodities for everybody who's not in the farming industry.
Well, old crop is what you just harvested or what you harvested this past October. So even though it was just harvested and just went in the bin, you know, as recently as last week, or for some of my guys, it's going to go in the bin maybe once the snow melts this coming week because not everyone's done with corn in my neck of the woods. That's old crop. Anything that was produced this past growing season, and looking ahead, new crop is what will be harvested next fall. And yeah, for most of my guys, we're already talking about how we want to handle marketing new crop, even though planting these the crop itself is 4 to 5 months away yet.
So now in corn and grains and wheat and in soybeans, it's all different, is it not?
Yeah. Soybeans and corn are the same. They're September 1st to September 1st. So that's what your crop year is made up from. You know, the first quarter of the marketing year is step one through beef 31, and then your Jan through March, and those are your quarter breakups that you have there. Wheat is June 1st to June 1st.
Okay.
So that's the difference.
All right, and then now, so we hear, you know, a lot of things going on, and grains have actually, you know, held up, you know, fairly well. I mean, you know, since we've last talked, I mean, you know, they've made some moves, but they're kind of trying to work their way higher. And soybeans have aptly, in my eyes, have broken to a new range of, you know, like 1020 to 1070. What's your look going forward here in the grains? Would you look for better prices or more of the same?
Yeah, I mean, to me right now, I think the bulk of it is of course, going to depend on South America. You know, and we're getting into parts of Argentina. We're working our way towards what our 4th of July is, or the equivalent to that, you know, from a production year standpoint. They're getting into that really critical time period for corn development. And then another few weeks here, we'll be looking at soybeans for Argentina. Brazil is such a big country that covers such a wide expanse of area. They're pretty much all over the place and what you could call, you know, important or imperative parts of production. But we'll be watching that. And I think, you know, in my opinion right now, though, if South America produces the crop that they're looking at, what we'll start to pay attention to is going to be next year's planted acres. To me, soybeans and corn hit the highest pricing ratio, meaning soybeans were higher than corn, the highest that we've seen in 20 years. That's huge. That makes a lot of decisions for guys, you know, already. Like I said, they're 4 or 5 months away from planting the crop, but they're already making decisions on what they're going to put in, barring any sort of weird weather event. You know, weather is the only thing that can change their mind after they make these decisions and purchase their seed and things like that. So to me, I think what we see happen without any South American surprise, so we'll just say that they produce the crop we're expecting them to. I think as we work our way into the new year, you start to see some of the air come out of the soybean balloon. You know, for the 480 million bushel carryout and the global carryout that we have, even with the giant demand that we have, I think we're perhaps overpriced by a buck or so. Just my opinion, if South America doesn't have any sort of weird thing happen production-wise. And I think we start to discuss the fact that we have 15 billion bushel of corn demand, meaning that we really can't take too big a hit to production this coming year. And I think you start to hear people discuss, okay, if corn acres are down 5 to 10 million from last year, and we only have a yield of 160 bushel, what does that mean for overall supply versus demand? And I think people would be kind of surprised with the level of demand we have right now, how quick we can go from too much corn to just enough corn to get by. And I think the same thing happens for wheat. So to me, I think corn and wheat give us a little bit of strength into the wintertime, barring anything outside surprising us, and soybeans start to weaken a bit is what I'm anticipating.
And I wouldn't disagree with that. I actually believe that wheat is going to have the best year next year, believe it or not. And I have a lot of reasons for that, but I also do think that the spread between corn and wheat will go back to what was normal. Of course, that is, you know, it's only normal when it is. And then, of course, when it's not,
yeah,
a lot of guys go broke trying to trade that spread. But I do think that we're going to see some normalcy here. And I'm a big believer in wheat. And I think that there's going to be, I'm looking for a dramatic break in the dollar as well, which obviously will help us. I think that's something that I've, you know, talked about all year, you know, with this. And I think now with the Fed meeting coming out and, you know, the realization that interest rates are going to finally rise. And, you know, you've already seen that in the bond market, which we'll talk about those things when we come back from the break. But, you know, there's a lot of things going on and a lot of knowledge that the average guy doesn't understand what goes on throughout a marketing year. And, you know, what are some of the things to do? And I have a lot more questions for you as well. But this is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. We're with Angie Setzer. the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. She also is on Twitter at the goddess of grains, and you got to check her out. Pretty sharp little number, knows what's going on, has the entire business wrapped around her finger. She knows what the hell's going on. This is the Bubba Show, LibertyTalk.fm. We'll get you the download of all the shows, including the Sporting Edge on the weekends. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll be right back with Angie Setzer after the break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. The long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialdini, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you, give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Angie Setzer, the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. Also, the goddess herself, the goddess of grains, does a lot of TV, does a lot of trading, understands the business well. So, Angie, we've got, I said before the break, I believe wheat's going to be the strongest this year, and I think there's going to be some troubles out there that we haven't accounted for. And over the last couple of years, farmers have had almost every bit of bad news they could possibly have, and we've come through it not bad. I mean, it hasn't been great, but not bad. What are your thoughts of my views, and what do you think going forward?
I agree. I think wheat does. I think wheat has the largest potential for the biggest breakout this year, and I think it's going to surprise some folks. I think we basically have jumped our last big crop hurdle of the narrative here. Australia, we knew, had a big crop. Australia's got a record crop. The USDA raised their production estimate pretty significantly this past Friday. And I think that's it. You know what I mean? I think going forward now we start to pay attention to the other issues that we have out there. The reduction in planted acreage and fall plantings in North America is going to be substantial. The conditions of what was planted are pretty ugly out there. And I think we could be surprised by seeing that happen throughout the world. Now, the question, of course, relies in Russia and the Ukraine. But I saw someone mention something last night that was kind of eye-opening to me, in the sense that with the Trump-Russian relations it considered, where Trump is likely to be one of the more friendly presidents that we've seen towards Russia in decades, potentially. What does that mean for the ruble? Does that mean that we could see a rally take place in that? And in that situation, if their currency were to increase dramatically, think about what that would mean to their exports. So there's some potential there. I've heard some quality issues that have started to pop up in their neck of the woods as well, that the good quality wheat isn't necessarily in the areas needed to get it exported properly. So I think you start to see some issues arise with overall supplies. How much of the record global stocks, A, are in poor quality, and then B, you have to take into consideration nearly half of the world's wheat supplies are sitting in the hands of the Chinese, quote-unquote sitting in the hands of the Chinese. We don't know really what they have or don't have. So I think the potential is there, and with the fund position that you've seen, basically turn into a black hole towards the short end, I think once if someone yells fire in this crowded theater, there's not going to be enough room for people to get to the exits, and it's going to be mind-blowing, and if we can get some friendly fundamentals or friendly ideas or trade psychology towards corn, that's where I'm at. I think we're surprised by both corn and wheat as we work our way, the first 6 months of 2017, and that's what concerns me. If guys are going to get married to planting extra soybeans here as they work towards spring and discover that soybeans by next year are down significantly, whereas wheat and corn could be potentially higher.
And that was my next question. So do you see a shift this year in planting? Do you think we're going to plant more beans, or what is your take, or what are you hearing early here in the, I guess, the planning stage of what we're going to do next year?
Yeah, I mean, we already are seeing or hearing about a significant cut in wheat acres, which is going to increase the available acres. And most of my guys who have cut their wheat acres are planning on putting them into soybeans. So that's an increase in soybean acres. It's not even corn versus soy. And then when you're talking to farmers out there, yes, a lot of them like to plant corn, but several of them have planted corn, and a few out there have discovered disease that has started to pop up recently over the last couple of years due to the planting of corn on corn on corn. Out here in northern Iowa, you can tell the corn acres that are going to go in by the anhydrous that they put on. It's a fertilizer that overwinters, and they plant into it next spring. It helps save time from a spring planting standpoint to get the fertilizer in and on in the fall. Last year, 2015, you couldn't throw a rock without hitting an anhydrous, a guy applying anhydrous in northern Iowa. That at that point, you know, looking back is easy to say, but it should have been a sign to me that we weren't going to see the cut in acres that we thought we were this past spring. If you recall, in March of this past year, everyone assumed that we were going to see soybean acres increase because soybeans had rallied through the early or the late winter months, and corn hadn't gone anywhere. And then we got the March 31st numbers, and corn acres were not down at all. In fact, they were higher. This fall, though, the fall of 2016 going into next year, the anhydrous application in our neck of the woods was down significantly. And here where I'm at in northern Iowa, you're either going to plant soy or you're going to plant corn. I mean, that's it. They don't have a very diverse crop set up. I mean, you might see a few guys with oats, but that's about it. So to me, I think the writing's on the wall that you could see a substantial increase in soybean acres. And that's what concerns me for folks going forward long term. You know, if something doesn't happen South American production wise and we see an increase in soybean acres, I see no reason why soy should be $2 or $3 more than where they are now. And that concerns me. Probably more $2 than $3, the potential is there for it to get kind of ugly for these guys if they don't hedge early on.
Well, and that is something else. I mean, you're a hedger, and I teach it and I do it as well. Explain to everybody the importance of being hedged. I mean, it's just a traumatic difference in your lifestyle, is it not?
Oh yeah, it's a form of risk management. You know, the difference in our business versus outside stock ownership or something of that nature is we are producing a physical commodity. You know, as in any other commodity out there. But the difference in commodities versus paper, paper trading is that we are producing that physical. So we have the risk that goes in or the costs that go in are associated with producing the physical. And, you know, in our industry, we have the one unique benefactor of raising a physical commodities. We have the ability to offset that risk through futures. And that's how we go about hedging. I mean, if I'm long physical, I'm short on the board, and if I'm short physical, I'm long on the board to offset my futures risk there. And I've had some really interesting conversations with traders in the past that are paper traders that are absolutely blown away that a farmer doesn't stay 100% hedged. And if you were to say that to a farmer, he would give you a litany of reasons why he can't stay 100% hedged. But it's interesting to see, what the futures market offers from a risk management tool for farmers.
Well, I mean, I'm a believer that a farmer should always be 100% hedged because mm-hmm. the way that I hedge, it doesn't matter. They get the benefit from either side of the market. So, I mean, and they never miss the big market if they're hedged. But I mean, one of the things is of course you mentioned it in, you know, the enormous cost that go in from a farming standpoint to put that thing together in the beginning of the year is the numbers would blow most people's mind at how much it costs to get started, mm-hmm. right?
Oh, it's millions upon millions of dollars for some guys. Yes, I mean there are operating loans out there that would curl hairs on some guys. You know, that they think they go out. If you were to sit down, probably money to money with a big time New York trader and show him what a farmer risks each spring if he went in and was completely unhedged, he probably shit himself. You know what I mean?
Oh, no, you're right. I agree.
It's true.
No,
the amount of risk and there are some farmers out there that do not realize the gravity of the situation and will roll the dice straight into fall or beyond.
Well, I mean, look at
millions of dollars.
Look, we know a couple things. Farmers are born to be bulls, right? To be bullish, because
yeah.
I mean, why else would you work 7 days a week, you know, 18 hours a day, putting all the work in and borrowing all the money to get there? So they're naturally bullish. And the funny thing is they also, our farmers typically like to play a little bit. They like to fire it up once in a while, right? I mean, you know, let's face it, they're willing to gamble.
It's amazing to me. You know, I think they don't even realize they don't understand the gravity of the situation because their father and the father before that father and some of these guys are five generation guys who, their great great grandfather or great 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 grandfather or whatever didn't even have the futures market to hedge. You know, there were times in the Dust Bowl era where farmers had to pay elevators in Kansas to take their wheat. Yet the next year they still grew wheat. You know. It is. I always say that farmers are the biggest optimists in the world. If they weren't, they wouldn't be farming.
Which I agree, because again, they're putting up they're putting up an enormous amount of capital, and most of them don't have it. I mean, it's all borrowed, is the most part. I mean, you know, because again, they continue to try to grow their business, and you know, you've got to be able to overcome bad years, and you know, every year is not every year is not great. We know that. You know, it's a business model that, you know, they have some great advantages because they do have the ability to hedge and offset risk. But it, you know, again, when you talk about the history of farming and how they go, they're very often willing to gamble and fire through and do what everybody did before them. Of course, the difference that I think most don't understand today is that the business has changed so much, and there's so much more competition even today, and because of the ability to grow so much more, you have to be much more dollar conscious about what you're doing, because now it's a different ball game than it was even, let's say, 30 years ago, because of what we do. So, but we're with Angie Setzer, the Vice President of Grains at Citizens Elevator. She is also the goddess of grains. You hear her all over the place. She's very big in this market, a great hedger, and a great friend of the program. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We're going to step out here for a break, but make sure you go to libertytalk.fm and download the Bubba Show every day, as well as the Sporting Engine on the weekends. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll be right back with Angie after the break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz.
After 10,000 beers and 28 years,
the goddess herself, Angie Setzer, the Vice President of Grains at Citizens Elevator. So, Angie, you know, most farmers, most people have, not only do they have their farms and that risk, but they also do carry equity portfolios as well. I mean, you know, they typically have either some mutual funds or, because they do invest their money in other places to put away money for retirement. And it's funny because what I've noticed is they seem to forget about that, and they don't really even manage that or watch it. What do you think? What do you see out there?
Yeah, I mean, I think that you have all kinds of different people in agriculture, of course, that are in farming itself. It just isn't anything else. And there are some guys that will overmanage that side of things, overmanage their expenses, overmanage how they're selling, overmanage this, that, and the other thing. And then you have another group of guys that they'll just figure it out. You know, they've been fortunate that they came in with reasonable equity and low interest rates, some of these younger guys. So the hardest part right now, if we don't see a price turnaround, will be, the potential shift there, higher interest rates and lesser equity than what they've had for a while, or maybe even tapped into equity. And so that's the concern that we have, is the guys that have been smart money managers these last few years and have taken advantage when the market has presented them with opportunities, and even some of the luckier few out there. There are some guys that have a hell of a lot more luck than skill when it comes to marketing, and they'll tell you that. But the smart money managers, just as in any other business, the smart money managers will be around through the hard times, whereas the the weaker, those who find that weaker will either see themselves taken over by farm managers, you know, from the banks. We're starting to see some of that happen where, quote unquote, you know, the farm manager, the person that's going to make it better for that guy is hired by the bank and sent out to the farm, or you'll flat out see some of these guys go out of business. And in worst case scenarios, unfortunately, we had it happen to us here a couple weeks back. You'll see some guys that just take their life and they're done. And it happened throughout the Dust Bowl. And unfortunately, I think if things turn real bad, you could see some of these big issues really start to pop up in farming. And it is a concern of mine.
And I mean, look, you know, again, we have to take care of, you know, business correctly and, you know, all of our businesses. And again, that's where we become a little bit lax. And, you know, I do equity hedging as well, because actually equity hedging is a lot more fun than farming hedging, because I don't have to sell my equities to eat. Right. I keep investing. And if I can hedge it and compound it, you know, that's one of the funny things that, you know, when I talk about hedging, you know, in an equity portfolio, what I'm looking for is I'm looking for those big downdrafts in the market so that I can take my hedge off, buy some more stock, and then watch the market go back up again. In farming hedging and your product, I mean, that's your life. And each year it changes because, again, we go into these different phases and the market's changing. A bad year is a bad year, and that's what we have to work on and worry about. But would you see anything major coming up besides, I know you think beans are possibly going to be in a little bit of trouble here. Do you see any major backwardation or contango models starting to show here anywhere?
Not that I'm seeing at this point in time. You know, everything seems we have reasonable supplies, so I don't see any reason why we should, you know, see the backwardation or in our little niche of the world, we call it the inversion type market, to where you start losing things. Of course, your old crop spread in soybeans is called the widowmaker for a reason. So, you know, my secondary concern or what I see that causes me greater concern here over the next 5 years is if we do start to see inflation develop, if the economy really starts to get off to a rip-roaring pace and we see significant inflation and interest rates start to increase, which the global headwinds, I think, will help limit some of that. But if we do over the next 5 to 10 years see that happen, I think there's a lot of farmers out there who have signed, you know, due to lower payments for the month or whatever may have been offered, you know, more of a flexible interest rate type approach to their financing. And so the concern out there is if you were to increase their cost of debt, you know, 1% to 5%, what would that mean for them overall from a payment standpoint and the ability to withstand that? So that's, I mean, going forward, I'm not overly concerned with the cash supply side of things. I'm not even necessarily overly concerned with the futures side of things. But even with the regulation rollback and things of that nature, do we see a cost of doing business increase substantially? You know, and as a farmer, that'd be probably one of the things that I'd be working on. You know, and as a business person, that's what we've done is we've started hedging our interest rates just to ensure, you know, because a slight increase in what it costs us to borrow money and we're starting to eat into our profit on a monthly standpoint. So that's my biggest concern right now is as we move ahead is what happens from an interest rate standpoint.
Well, right. I mean, that's a big thing because, again, especially when you're borrowing a lot of money on not fixed rates, but rates that can adjust or float. It becomes a very big problem. And of course, we're seeing a dramatic rise in 10-year money and 30-year money now. So this can't be good news either for last year if you're still paying off balances or for the upcoming marketing year. It's going to change a little bit of the dynamics if we have real interest rates again, because that cheap money is not going to be there. So it has to even make prices go higher, does it not?
Yeah, I mean, and that's, if you think about it, if any of these farmers, some of these farmers that have gotten into the business over the last 10 to 15, even 20 years or more, have not really known how to manage from an interest rate standpoint. And I'm not saying we're going back there, but there are very few farmers that survived the high interest rates of the mid-80s, and they'll tell you why. I mean, it just was very, very difficult for them to do so. And I think with the the amount of leverage or how leveraged many of these guys are now, I think the change in cost right there isn't even really something you could truly factor in, but it is something that these guys need to be aware of here in the short term.
Now,
the days of cheap money could be gone, but who the hell knows with
well, they're going to be gone because that's the only way that the only way the economy can actually improve is by getting rid of cheap money, because the cheap money only helps the guys who have money. When you say you guys guard against interest, how do you guys guard against interest rate rates? What are you guys doing?
Oh gosh, you would have to ask me right now, and I can't. I knew you were going to ask me that.
Well,
We're hedging. What we're doing. You go ahead and explain what we're doing, because right now I'm having mom.
No. I mean, there's different ways to do it, but you know, I'm assuming you're hedging against either 10-year rates or under. I mean, certainly you're not worried about 30-year rates. So, you know,
basically hedging the difference between the cost of the baseline cost of money from the bank.
Yeah.
Because we do see an interest rate increase, so we've locked that in. And we're actually ahead in the trade because the idea of interest rates increasing has. So we're basically making sure that we bought an option, to put it plainly.
Yeah.
We bought an option basically similar to like a call option, to where as the interest rate rises, our equity in our account will build, and it'll help to offset our cost of borrowing.
There you go. See, it was easy. I get that. I mean, look, I'm a big believer that, see, this is where I think that we a lot of us missed the boat is – I believe that farmers and producers should be hedging fuel costs. I think they should be hedging hedging against the dollar, because again, we know those are the things that affect them the most. Those are the hidden costs that they don't know, and that was one of the big problems the airlines had for so many years, which is why they always went broke, and they finally got smart after following Herb Kelleher from Southwest Airlines to hedge oil. All right, you got 30 seconds. Give me a quick summation of what the hell you think is going to happen.
Well, I think we'll see as we move forward. Soybeans kind of slowly lose air. I think we'll see corn and wheat kind of stay supported, hopefully catch a bid. I'm interested to see what happens with our Chinese trade discussion as we move forward with Trump, you know, in the currency manipulation standpoint. But at this point, I can't say it's necessarily a bad thing that he has post-Russian ties, although it may leave a bitter taste in some folks' mouths. So the split will get bigger in the country as we move forward, and hopefully things will improve for the better. But I'm not holding my breath at this point just yet.
The words, according to Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains and vice president of grains at Citizen Lover. Angie, thanks. As always, it's great to have you on.
Oh, thank you for having me. I always love it.
This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz. Make sure you go to libertytalk.fm and download the show every day. We're trying to get over 300,000. I need some help. Let's go. Get out there. Vote. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station. Thanks, everybody. Have a great day. Wake up, Maggie. I
think I got some. Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.